Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has entered Puri. He's fainted in ecstasy before Lord Jagannath. He's been awakened. He's been taken to the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, been awakened from his ecstatic trance by the chanting of Mukunda Datta, Nityananda Prabhu. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was inquiring then about this amazing sannyasi who has just come to Jagannath Puri. And he wishes to give him another initiation, change his sannyasa initiation from the Bharati Sampradaya to the Saraswati Sampradaya. The Bhattacharya inquired. So he was speaking to his Gopinathacharya, who knew the position of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he was the Lord. So Gopinathacharya replied that there was no need for him to accept sannyas from a superior sampradaya, because that's what Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had said. Now, Bhattacharya kahi, he's going to speak. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya responds. He inquires, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in his full-fledged youthful life. How old was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he took sannyas? How can he keep the principles of sannyas? Yes. I shall...
Next one?
74 we just read. 75 now on page 228. I shall continue to recite. So he wanted to fix Mahaprabhu in his vow of sannyas. So how is he going to do it? His kindness. I shall continuously recite the Vedanta philosophy before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that he remain fixed in his renunciation and thus enter upon the path of monism. He wanted to fix Mahaprabhu in understanding the oneness of everything. And that way he wouldn't become bewildered, he was thinking, into becoming an enjoyer and thereby fall from his position of sannyas. Because if everything is one, there's no question of anyone enjoying anything else, because everything is the same as everyone is itself. So there is only the one. So there's no question of an enjoyer. So the materialists, they think that I am the enjoyer, I am Purusha, Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunti Prakriti Janiha. And all of Prakriti, all the material energy, everything composed of the material energy is meant for my enjoyment. I am the enjoyer and everything is meant for my enjoyment. And the Mayavadis, impersonalists, will think that no, you are not the enjoyer, nor is that enjoyed, Purusha and Prakriti, that mood of enjoyer and enjoyed, is just a product of Maya. When the Maya is removed, you'll see there is no enjoyer and enjoyed. Everything is just so. What is the Vaishnava philosophy? How does it differ from both those? Only Krishna is the joy, and we? Yes. And what? And so, what do we do? Do we sit back and say, "Okay, Krishna, enjoy me. Yeah, enjoy me," as if we were some ice cream or something, and he was going to take a scoop out of us? We have to serve. So the rectification of the soul's mood, the individual soul's mood, from I am the enjoyer to I am the servant of God, and O Lord, O energy of the Lord, O Krishna, Srimati Radharani, how can I serve you? This is the process of Krishna consciousness, of sadhana bhakti, to change the mood from one to the other. Not to become one. Not to become one. Such a funny expression. We are all one. What does that mean? What does it mean? We are all one. One what? Well, yes, that's the actual explanation. Well, qualitatively one with Krishna, but quantitatively he is great and we are tiny. Is there anyone who doesn't think they are tiny? There's a lot of people who don't think they are tiny, and in fact we all tend to think that we are huge and important and very, very consequential. You two over there, are you huge and consequential, or are you tiny and insignificant? Are you sure? Are you sure that you're tiny and insignificant? Putting you on the spot. Are we sure that we are? I kind of tend to think that although no one will say, I am huge and consequential and I am the one who is so important, but I think very few of us actually think that we are tiny and insignificant. At least I can speak for myself. There's a tendency for our heads to swell into proportions that are unbefitting our actual position. Because even if we can do something, and everyone can do something, our doing is completely dependent upon who's doing. Our ability to do something, anything, even our breathing, even our touching, our moving, is completely dependent upon whom? I'm asking the ones who are even more tiny. Do you know who everything is dependent upon? You can... Who? Who is it? Yeah, in other words, if I want to study today, do you study? You study your lessons? You do math? How much is 4 plus 3?
8.
Yes? He sees 7 plus 1 is Krishna. Krishna is there everywhere, so it's 7 plus Krishna is 8. Always very good. And is that a flute in your pocket? Huh? What will you do with that flute?
Play it.
You know how to play the flute? Oh, you play with the flute. I see. Now I understand. Very good. So anyway, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's mood was out of his kindness. He wanted to, and actually his affection for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because his father and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grandfather were related. They had a relationship. So, not in the way that people talk about relationships nowadays, but they were friends, they were associates. So, he wanted to preach to him philosophically and let him hear and hear and hear and hear Vedanta philosophy and become fixed in monism, and that he thought would save him. Purport. According to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, according to whom? Everyone is listening very carefully. Among sannyasis. Amongst who? Sannyasis. It's hard to listen though. The cultivation of Vedanta philosophy helps in becoming detached from sense gratification. Thus a sannyasi can protect the prestige of wearing a loincloth kopan. One has to practice sense control as well as mind control, and subdue the six forces of speech, mind, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals. Then, one can become expert in understanding the devotional service of the Lord, and thus become a perfect sannyasi. Without controlling the senses and the mind, what difficulty will we have in Krishna consciousness and being fixed? We'll say, now I'm going to do this service for Krishna, because I am Krishna's servant and he is Purushottam, the supreme enjoyer. But then, a command will come to us from the tongue. Obey your thirst. Or from the mind, rather. Obey your tongue. Your tongue wants something to eat right now. Therefore, you must do just as your tongue says. You must become angry now when you don't get what you want. Follow your senses. Don't follow Krishna. Not as in a silly way, as I'm overemphasizing it, but basically the mind will speak to us in little voices like that. Yeah, you really want to enjoy. You should be doing this. Eat this. Smoke that. drink that, run after this one, buy that. Being whipped by these different sense centers. Get angry, this person really deserves. Or whether they deserve it or not, you're angry at them. You should express your feelings. Be upfront. Get angry. Why repress it? The mind will tell us so many things. Be lusty, be angry, be greedy. If you don't take care of yourself, who will take care of you? So many expressions, so many little buttons the mind will thrust in front of us that we should wear. You are the center. Look what this person has done to you. They really deserve you to get chastised, punished. They should be angrified. And you are the angrifying agent. And if one is controlled by these forces, and if you think they aren't forces, try and not be controlled by your mind. Then one will have so much trouble in Krishna consciousness. One will not be able to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. What to speak of, maintain the position of sannyasi, a perfect sannyasi. So Prabhupada in his purport is saying that if one can control these things, these agents, vacho vegam manasakroda vegam jiva vegam udarapasta vegam, then one can become expert in understanding the devotional service of the Lord and become a perfect sannyasi. For that purpose, one must cultivate knowledge and renunciation regularly. When one is attached to material sense gratification, he cannot protect his sannyas order or any other order. Only one will protect the orders of his senses. Sabhabhama Bhattacharya suggested that by the study of Vairagya renunciation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu might be saved from the clutches of the full-fledged youthful desires. Because it is very difficult. Even in those days it was difficult. What to speak of nowadays, to control those minds and keep fixed away from desires to enjoy the senses. Everything is flaunted nowadays in contemporary materialistic civilization that Prabhupada would call so-called civilization. Why did Prabhupada call contemporary civilization so-called civilization? Where are you going?
Outside.
How do you know? How do you know there's an outside outside? Well, what happens? Maybe it's like a moving picture or something like on television. And when you go outside, there's nothing actually there. And you'll just fall down into a big hole, a big black hole. Well, how do you know if you step outside that door? Oh! Well, what happened, Shami?
Oh, I dug a hole.
That's what I thought. So Savabhama Bhattacharya then suggested, are you going to walk outside now and fall in that same hole that Shami fell in? Oh, good. Whew. If Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would like, I could bring him into a first-class sampradaya by offering him saffron cloth and performing the reformatory process again. Reinitiation. Prabhupada's purport. The Bhattacharya wanted to reinstate Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Saraswati sampradaya because he did not like the Lord's belonging to the Bharati Sampradaya or Puri Sampradaya. Actually, he did not know the position of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not depend on an inferior or superior Sampradaya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead remains in the supreme position in all circumstances. So, Gopinath Acharya was hearing this from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he was with Mukunda Datta. And how did they feel when they heard that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was thinking of elevating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, bringing him up to a higher position? Did they feel happy? Did they feel happy? No. Why? Yeah, he was the Supreme Lord. Gopinatha Charja Mukunda Dutta became very unhappy when they heard this. Gopinatha Charja therefore addressed Savabhauma Bhattacharya as follows. My dear Bhattacharya, you do not know the greatness of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are found in him to the highest degree. Prabhupada's purport. Since the Bhattacharya was an impersonalist, he had no idea of the absolute truth beyond the impersonal effulgence. However, Gopinathacharya informed him that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who know the absolute truth know it in three phases, as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedanti tat tatva vedas. Who knows that verse?
Bodhi.
Thank you. Those who are in knowledge of the non-dual absolute truth know very clearly what is Brahman, what is Paramatma, and what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there is one absolute truth, but that absolute truth can be understood in different ways. What's an example of this? That makes it easy to understand. There's one absolute truth, but it can be understood in different ways. What's an example of this? It's a good example, but it's for something else, that one. You can use it, but you can use it for something else. The sun, yeah. Like there is one sun. But there's three ways of understanding the sun god, Vivajan, or the sun globe or the sunshine. Or one could say another example.
The king?
The king. Yes. What are the three features of the king?
His energy, his representative.
Well, the government, you can say, which is his energy. And then there's the position of king, and then there is the person who is the king. So depending upon your intimacy, most people just know Gesi government when they understand the how things work. They see government. That's like understanding the oneness of everything, how there's nothing separate from God. And then other people see, oh, there is the king. Very reverential. And then other people who are very, very intimate with him, they know directly the person who is the king. They know him very well. Maybe they wrestle with him. Maybe they call him dear. Maybe they'll yell at him even. Maybe his children will ride upon his back or something, as if he was a horse. So different relationships are possible, and how you perceive the king is dependent upon your relationship with him. So similarly, dependent upon how our realization of this one absolute truth, just like there's still one king and one son, despite the three different realizations of it, depending upon our relationship with that one absolute truth, we'll perceive it differently. So what depends, what is our relationship, the quality of our relationship, what does it depend upon? Because our realization will depend on our relationship. And what does our relationship depend on? The process that we use. So if we use jnana or meditative process or just renunciation and ascending process, we will understand the absolute truth as all-pervading. If we use the process of yoga, we will understand the Lord as Paramatma. And if we use the process of bhakti, Krishna kindly reveals the full extent of himself because of how much affection he has for his devotees. His reciprocation with his devotees. Krishna reciprocates. Yeyatamam prapadyante. So those who have knowledge of the non-dual absolute truth know very clearly what is Brahman, what is Paramatma, and what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Sat Aishwarya Puna. Who knows what that means? Sat Aishwarya Puna. What does Aishwarya mean? Opulence. And what does Sat mean?
Six.
Six. And Puna. So he's full of six opulences. What is one of those opulences that the Lord has? Just one.
Knowledge.
Knowledge. What does that mean, that he's full of knowledge?
Knowledge.
Huh?
Knowledge.
He knows everything. Everything. That's a lot. He knows everything. Past, present, future. Everything that everyone is thinking. He knows how everything works. Why something doesn't work. Everything. What's another opulence? Beauty. What does it mean that God has all Sat Aishwarya Purna in relationship to beautiful? Beauty.
All beautiful.
What does it mean to be all beautiful?
He never stops getting more.
He's so beautiful. Anything that is beautiful in this world has just the smallest drop of the complete beauty of Krishna. So how beautiful is Krishna? How beautiful is Krishna? And the others, it's two we have. Strength. How strong is someone that is all strong? He's very strong. He can lift planets, he can create universes, he can destroy thousands of universes. So powerful. Three. What else?
Renunciation.
What does that mean?
That he possesses everything, he's not attached to that?
He's not attached at all. Completely detached. Except from...
Arantia.
Huh?
Arantia.
And the residents of Vrindavan. He's not only not detached from them, but he is controlled by them, by their love. Fully renounced. What else? Two more.
Fame.
Huh? Fame. All famous. And? Strength, we said. What other one?
Wealth.
Wealth. What does it mean to be all wealthy? That means that if there is one little thing that he didn't have, that wasn't his, then he wouldn't be all wealthy. He would be all wealthy minus my car. And I would have something. So when we say that he's all wealthy, it means that every single thing that exists is his. Now what does that leave us with? Not much. So how could we become proud if we don't have anything? How about ourselves even? So okay, at least he possesses everything. My car, my watch, my stereo set, family, bank balance, my bread machine. But at least he does. At least I'm me. So, at least I have myself. So Krishna possesses everything. He has all wealth except for me. So one could say, well, you're not very much, so that's not... He could have all wealth and not have you, and it wouldn't be any loss. But he even has us. Even we belong to him. Do you belong to Krishna?
Yes.
See, I told you. You? You? Yes? You? 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 Yeah? Yeah? Shaking Tana? You're Krishna's. How nice. Nice to meet you. Gopinathacharya continued. So Gopinathacharya emphasized that all those six opulences were completely existing in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gopinathacharya continued, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is celebrated as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parama Ishar. Those who are ignorant in this connection find the conclusion of knowledgeable men very difficult to understand. The disciples of Sarvabhaumacharya retaliated. Did they like this conclusion that Gopinathacharya was instructing their teacher? They didn't like it. So they replied, by what evidence do you conclude that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord? In other words, they're saying anyone can say that they're God. He's God, he's God. By what evidence? What is your praman? What is the shastric proof that he is the Supreme Lord? Gopinathacharya replied, the statements of authorized acharyas who understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are proof. So he said the proof is the statements to understand the Lord, one has to understand the shastra by the acharyas. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Since the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there have been many pseudo-incarnations in India who do not present authorized evidence. 500 years ago, the disciples of Sarvabhaumacharya, being very learned scholars, were certainly right in asking Gopinathacharya for evidence. If a person proposes that he is God, or that someone else is an incarnation of God himself, he must cite evidence from Shastra to prove his claim. Thus, the request of the Bhattacharya's disciples is quite bona fide. So if someone says to you, oh, this person is God, or this person is God, this person is God, what is the proper way to reply? Graham? Yes, and what kind of proof? Yeah, and the proof is shastric proof. That's like there was one so-called incarnation of God. He was like a little, like a young boy. This was in the 70s. Now he's gone to, I don't know where, but he's gone. I don't know, he's probably still in the world enjoying life somewhere. But if you would ask his disciples, if he's God, where is his universal form? And their reply was, first you have to surrender to him, and then you shall see it, be able to see it. And then you could ask, well, are you surrendered to him? Have you seen his universal form? Because just to say you're God, anyone can say, oh, I am God. Anyone can say it. But to show universal form, or to have the Shastra confirm that you're the Lord, is something completely different. Do you have all opulences? Do you possess everything? I once heard Prabhupada reply about this fellow. He's so foolish that he has to go to the hospital for a toothache because he has a toothache, that he doesn't think, how am I God if I have to go to the hospital because I have a toothache? And the foolish disciples who believe everything will say, oh, this is his leela, to go to a hospital because he has a toothache. So silly. Such a cheater. So the people who wish to believe such things are cheated. And they, as Prabhupada would say, that the relationship, there's always a good relationship between the cheaters and the cheated. Those who want to cheat and those who like to be cheated. So to save us from being cheated, we get spiritual knowledge from the Shastra, from Prabhupada's books. So this is a legitimate question. How do you know he's God? What is the praman? What is the evidence? Unfortunately, at the present moment, it has been fashionable to present an incarnation of God without referring to the Shastras. Before an intelligent person accepts someone as an incarnation of God, however, he must ask about the evidence. When the disciples of Savabhauma Bhattacharya challenged Gopinathacharya, he immediately replied correctly, "We must hear the statements of great personalities in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Lord Krishna establishes the Supreme Personality of Godhead by statements from authorized persons like Brahma, Narada, Vyasadeva, Asita, Arjuna, and many others. Where is this coming from? Where is Prabhupada's statement that Krishna establishes the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Asita, Vyas, Narada? Where is that coming from?
10,
Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter. Is it 11th verse? 10:11 is Param Dhamma, Param Brahma then, right? Is that right? Where is the Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram? 12th verse. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also established as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by evidence from the same personalities. This will be explained later. Shishya Kahe, the disciples said, "We derive knowledge of the Absolute Truth by logical hypothesis." That's called anuman, inference. Gopinathacharya replied, "One cannot attain real knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by such logical hypothesis and argument." There's a purport explaining this. That one may be able to understand an aspect, the distant aspect of the Absolute Truth, through logic and argument, but one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead through logic and argument. One needs Shastra and actually the association of exalted devotees. Prabhupada's purport. The Mayavadi philosophers in particular make certain hypotheses about the Absolute Truth. They reason that in the material world we experience that everything is created. If we trace the history of anything, we find a creator. Is that true? Is there anything that doesn't have a source, that doesn't come from anywhere? So nothing comes from somewhere? He said, there is nothing as nothing. Therefore, there must be a creator of this huge cosmic manifestation. That's correct. By such reasoning, they come to the conclusion that a higher power has created this cosmic manifestation. The Mayavadis do not accept that great power to be a person. Their brains cannot accommodate the fact that this huge cosmic manifestation can be created by a person. This is because as soon as they think of a person, they think of a person within the material world with limited potency. Sometimes the Mayavadi philosophers will accept Lord Krishna or Lord Rama as Bhagawan, as God, but they think of the Lord as a person having a material body. The Mayavadis do not understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has a spiritual body. They think of Krishna as a great personality, a human being, within whom there is the supreme impersonal power, Brahman. So Prabhupada used to get furious about this because there was a Mayavadi commentator on the Bhagavad Gita before Prabhupada's first Bhagavad Gita was published. Anyone know what year? 68. It was by Macmillan, a purple Bhagavad Gita. And before that, when Prabhupada would be lecturing from the Bhagavad Gita, he would use another translation. He would use the translation by the first president of India, who was a scholarly person named Dr. Radhakrishnan. And the verses were translated, okay, Prabhupada said, but the purports were all impersonal or Mayavadi. So especially because that was his own thoughts. So Prabhupada would get furious because Krishna would say, surrender unto me, manmana bhava madbhakto. He would say, you think about me. It's specifically me, or in the, or for instance in the Bhagavatam in the second canto, aham eva sameva gre nanya yat sadasat param paschara aham yare tatscha yobhisheta sosmram aham. So three times Krishna will say aham, means I am existed before the creation. Or in the Bhagavad Gita verse, Krishna says, think about me. And in Dr. Radhakrishnan's purport, he would say, what Krishna means is not think about him, but think about the unborn, unmanifest within him, just as Prabhupada is saying here. So in other words, he's saying, what Krishna is saying, what you should do is not what Krishna says, but I'll give you the real meaning, which is completely different from what Krishna is actually saying, what he's directly saying. He's saying, me, 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 me. And the great philosopher is saying, what Krishna really means is not him, but the unborn, unmanifest within him. Completely opposite of what Krishna is saying. Just like, just imagine, if I'm saying that, who's giving class today? So you say, Burijan is giving class. And then someone says, what Burijan really means is not that he's giving class, but that everything and everyone is giving class. So then, naturally, what will people do? Everyone will start talking at once. I am giving class. You will give class, and you will give class, and you will give class, and everyone all at the same time. So if everyone is talking at the same time, who's giving class? No one. So to say, in the same way, if you say that everyone and everything is God, it's basically saying that no one is God. So therefore, impersonalism or Mayavad philosophy is actually atheism. So if Krishna is saying, just think about, when he's saying think about him, what he really means is thinking about the unborn unmanifested within him, and we all have that, the unborn unmanifested within us, then he's not God any more than I am God. Why should I listen to the Bhagavad Gita? Why should anyone listen to the Bhagavad Gita? We should all listen to the Burijan Gita, for instance. So this is how insane everything becomes. So Prabhupada would become furious, actually, with Dr. Radhakrishnan's, what Krishna really means is not what he says. And therefore his Bhagavad Gita, he called Bhagavad Gita as it is, not as it isn't. So they think of the Lord as a person having a material body. They do not think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has a spiritual body. They think of Krishna as a great personality, a human being with whom there is a supreme, within whom there is a supreme impersonal power, Brahman. Therefore, they finally conclude that the impersonal Brahman is the supreme, not the personality, Krishna. This is the basis of Mayavad philosophy. However, from the Shastras, we can understand that the Brahman effulgence is the bodily rays of Krishna. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagaranda koti koti shvashisha vasudadi vibhuti vinam tad brahma nishkalam anantamashisha bhutam govindam hari purusham tamaham bhajami. I serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the primeval Lord, the effulgence of whose transcendental body is known as the Brahma Jyoti. That Brahma Jyoti, which is unlimited, unfathomed, and all-pervasive, is the cause of the creation of unlimited numbers of planets and varieties of climates and specific conditions of life, from the Brahma Samhita. Mayavadi philosophers study in the Vedic literature, but they do not understand that the Absolute Truth is the last stage of realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. They do accept the fact that there is a creator of this cosmic manifestation, but that is anuman, hypothesis. The Mayavadi philosopher's logic is something like seeing smoke on a hill. When there is a forest fire on a high hill, smoke is first of all visible. The smoke is created when there is fire, just as one can conclude there is fire from smoke. The Mayavadi philosophers conclude there must be a creator of the cosmic manifestation. The disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted evidence to show that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually the creator of the cosmic manifestation. Only then would they accept him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of creation. Gopinath Acharya replied that one could not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by guesswork, by anuman, by hypothesis, by logic, by inference. Just like if there is smoke on the hill, by logic, and it's not a cloud, but what can you assume, as Prabhupada is saying? What could you assume? That there's a fire. But can you understand, and would you be right in assuming that there's a fire? But can you understand the person who started the fire by seeing the smoke on the hill? By inference, by logic? Not extraordinarily either. Not through the logic. You need more information put in there to understand. If you understand from authoritative scriptures or a person who was there, who has experienced the truth, says this person has started the fire, you need extra information. So that extra information is the shastric information. Through inference alone, one cannot understand. Otherwise, it is what Prabhupada said, is guesswork. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Naham prakasya savasya yoga maya samavrita mudayam nabijananti lokomam ajam avyayam. I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I'm covered by my eternal creative potency, yoga maya. Because of yoga maya, because of the illusion, we cannot see, we cannot pierce reality to the depth that we can understand Krishna by own power. He has to lift the curtain so we can see. And so the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. The Supreme Personality of Godhead reserves the right of not being exposed to non-devotees. He can only be understood by bona fide devotees. The Lord says elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam Mavijananti. One can understand me only by the devotional process. Bhagavad Gita 18:55. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Bhaktosi me sakacheti rahasyam yetad uttamam. What does that verse mean? Bhaktosi me maya cheti sakacheti rahasyam yetad uttamam. Because you are my sakha, because you are my very dear friend and devotee, bhaktosi me sakha jeti. Because you are my devotee and dear friend, rahasyam, this very secret, uttamam, I will certainly tell you this topmost secret. So unless one is a devotee, an actual devotee, Krishna will not reveal himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here, Lord Krishna informs Arjuna that he is disclosing the secrets of Bhagavad Gita to him because he is his devotee. Arjuna was not a sannyasi, nor was he a Vedantist or a Brahmana. He was, however, a devotee of Krishna. The conclusion is that we have to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself says, Guru Krishna Pasare Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. More evidence can be cited to show that without the mercy of a devotee or the mercy of Krishna, one cannot understand that what Krishna is and what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is confirmed in the next verse. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions? Comments? Yes. Money.
Why do they
call
it a cold civilization?
So-called civilization. But is sometimes it is cold, but sometimes it is hot too. But it's so-called. Sorry for my New York pronunciation. So-called civilization. Why did Prabhupada call it a so-called civilization? Yeah, but why do you say it's uncivilized? It's when people call it a civilization, but it's not actually a civilization. So before you can understand that, you'd have to understand what a civilization is and what its purpose is. So what is the purpose of a real civilization? To help people spiritually advance. When culture, the civilization, is based on helping people spiritually advance, then it is a real civilization. But when it's seemingly a civilization, but based on bringing people just to hell without knowledge and bluffing, they know the purpose of life, to enjoy economic prosperity forever, with no care for the eternal soul, it is not actually a civilization. It is not civil. And we can see that people don't act civilly. So that's what I meant.
People are comparatively better than modern so-called civilized society.
Sounds like a political question. Right. I'll give you a political answer. I'm not actually familiar with the Aboriginal culture to make such a comment.
Aboriginal cultures all across the world.
Oh, they're probably. I don't know. I don't really. I mean, we'd have to sit down and say what we actually mean and what aspects, because if something is simple, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's any better. It depends on what its actual goals are and if people advance by being in that culture, in that civilization. But then you'd have to say, what about today's so-called civilization? Then you'd have to say, well, it does have its religious elements, and then some people will say, but those are subservient to the economic elements. So it becomes complicated to talk about it, because everyone hears what they, according to their own mentality, they'll hear different things. So if you really to answer a question like that seriously, you'd have to really understand what does it mean. When Prabhupada would get questions, what do you think about such and such person? See, those kind of questions are always difficult, because if you criticize the person, then there's always someone who's going to get offended because of an attachment. So Prabhupada, he advised to answer, I'm not sure about that person, but what's his philosophy? So then, if someone gives a philosophical point, well, the Aboriginals believe in this particular way, and you can compare that to what the modern so-called civilized people. If you can get to make a statement of what they believe, put into one statement, then you could compare them along that way and avoid all the politics that gets involved with people's emotions and attachments and affections and what's correct politically this particular week. That's not a flute. Does it make sounds? What sounds does it make? Oh, I see. It is. It's one of. And you go like this, and it changes the sound. Oh. Any other question? Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.